The Manitoba Association of Christian Homeschools would like to thank the Learning House for sponsoring this recording.
So this afternoon, I want to talk with you on the topic of education versus schooling. And my goal in this presentation is to help you to think differently about these two, what I believe are totally different concepts. I think oftentimes we conflate them. We think of these two things as synonymous. And yet, I believe not only are they not the same concept, I believe that in many ways, schooling is one of the greatest detriments to true education that has ever been created. And I know that's a radical thesis, but I'm going to seek to explain that throughout this presentation. Noah Webster, who of course was famous for writing one of the first dictionaries in the English language in 1828, in his original dictionary, he defined schooling very simply and succinctly as, quote, instruction in school. I think that certainly is very self-explanatory. But then when he decided to define education, that was much more difficult. It was much more complicated. He said this about the word education, quote, the bringing up as of a child, instruction, formation of manners. Education comprehends all that series of instruction and discipline which is intended to enlighten the understanding, correct the temper, and form the manners and habits of youth and fit them for usefulness in their future stations. He went on to say, to give children a good education in manners, arts, and science is important. To give them a religious education is indispensable, and an immense responsibility rests on parents and guardians who neglect these duties. Now, when he wrote this in 1828, the government school system had not yet been invented. I think sometimes we forget that the government model of institutional schooling is not the tried and true method. For 6,000 years of human history, the predominant method of education has been parents teaching their own children. And then about 170 years ago, this new experiment, social experiment, of teaching children in an institutional school that was run by the government was created, and was actually created mostly by people like Horace Mann, and who was a Unitarian God-hater, inspired by Karl Marx in his Communist Manifesto, who said as the 10th plank of the manifesto, we need to have a free system of public schools. So most of the people who created the government school systems in the late 1800s were Prussian, Soviet educators who were anti-Christian in their orientation. And yet, because even though this government school experiment is new and novel, and it's only 170 years old, for most people, that's all they've known. They grew up with that model. It's what they were familiar with in their lifetime. And so it seems very normal to them. They don't think about it as being something new and experimental. It seems like to them, it's always been the tried and true method. But far, you know, as I would say, as recent in history as 1828, Noah Webster said that the responsibility for education rests on parents and legal guardians. They're the ones who have the responsibility for this. And they shouldn't neglect their duties. It was outside of the framework of people at that time to imagine or conceive of the idea that people would simply send their children away from them for somewhere between 10,000 and 15,000 hours of their early childhood development to be trained by strangers that they really don't even know. That's a radical concept. One of the things that schooling fails to recognize is the vast differences in the ways that people learn. There's a term that is used within educational circles for the different learning methods or the ways in which people receive information. It's called multiple intelligences, and it includes things like musical rhythmic, visual spatial, verbal linguistic, logical mathematical, bodily kinesthetic, interpersonal, and intrapersonal. These are all different ways in which people receive information, the way that their brain processes, the way that their brain connects to ideas. And yet schools try to teach every student exactly the same way without recognizing these differences or providing a mechanism to teach to students based on their individuality. In fact, schools are very much all about standardization. The idea is to create a standardized product. The government school system came very much out of the Industrial Revolution and modernity. The idea that we learned how to mass produce things. And so the same kind of ideals that created the factory or the assembly line with the ability to create millions and millions of parts that are standardized, that are all the same. There's a standardization to and a mechanization to this. The government school system was very much modeled after this. Now, I should be very clear here that when I use the term schooling, I do recognize that there are, especially today, a number of different flavors of academic or schooling approaches. Now we have kind of a bit of a smorgasbord on the horizon, and that not every school is exactly the same, and that there are some outliers or there are some forms of schooling that won't fit into some of the things that I'm talking about that would be exceptions to the rule. But what I'm meaning when I say schooling for the most part throughout this presentation is the thing that we typically think of, right? The government-controlled, government-run, tax-funded, as we call it, public school system. Now, prior to the invention of tax-funded compulsory attendance government schools, there actually were things that I think could be honestly called public schools. And they were run by the public and they were controlled by the public, and the public actually funded them directly. The parents, in other words, directly funded them, and the public could attend, but the government wasn't involved in the process. And in fact, today, those kinds of schools that were sometimes called common schools or cottage schools, really today we would call them homeschool co-ops. And they were very decentralized. They were very locally controlled. But with the government monopoly on education came this, again, mass-produced approach to learning. And so standardized teaching became the model, where I think education has a very different goal. The goal of schooling is standardization of the student. The goal of education is to emphasize that each person is an individual and that each person should be taught based on their own individuality. So rather than creating masses of humans who are homogenized and standardized, true education would be seeking to create unique and talented individuals. I think we just saw an example of that in the graduate recognition. Each one of these graduates is completely different than the others. They have different goals, they have different dreams, they have different ambitions. And so they have thankfully received an education that has prepared them for the uniqueness of their own life. They didn't go through a kind of cookie cutter approach to education. Schooling is very focused on creating conformity. It is very predicated on the importance of peer pressure and making sure that students learn how to fit into the class and care more about what their friends think and what their peers think than the values of their parents or their church communities. Whereas rather than teaching conformity, true education would be preparing students to be leaders, not followers. Schooling really emphasizes the importance of not questioning the status quo, of going along with the things that are prescribed by the authority structure. True education, I think, is the opposite of that. I think true education encourages questioning. It encourages critical thinking. It encourages the student to ask, why are we doing this and what's the reason behind it? In case maybe you're chafing a little bit at my concept that schooling and education are not the same, or that there's a differentiation between the two, let me read to you a quote from Sir Winston Churchill. He said, "The schools do not necessarily have much to do with education. They are mainly institutions of control, where basic habits must be inculcated into the young. Education is quite different and has little place in school." So again, I mean, I understand if you disagree with me, and that's fair enough, but if you're brave enough to disagree with Sir Winston Churchill, that's on you. Schooling, again, was really trying to create people who would be equipped to work within the factory, or then later to work within a cubicle. is to create people who would be good employees. I think true education is encouraging people to not just be employees, but to think entrepreneurially. Now, obviously, not everyone can own a business, and not everyone can be the CEO or the boss of a company. We obviously need people who are employees. We need people who are workers. So I'm not disparaging that. But I think that even when you are an employee, I think you can have a mentality of being an entrepreneur, of thinking about the big picture, of really understanding what is it that our company is trying to do and how are we trying to serve people. I had an experience of this when I was staying at a hotel. I went downstairs for breakfast, and you know how they have those buffet-style breakfasts that are kind of quick, grab and go? Well, something had happened this morning this other hotel, where there was like 100 people who all converged on breakfast at the same time. I don't know if some big group that was staying there, something like that. What created a crisis? There was a bottleneck and people couldn't figure out how to get through the food line. And so obviously they need to leave. They've got a day that they're trying to get going and they can't get food. And so tempers start to flare. People get upset. Well, there was a hotel employee, a lady who was working in the kitchen, and she sized up the situation and she very quickly ran and got some folding tables. She put them out, made some lines. She set up buffet style on both of these two table lines, and she told people, go this way, and she started funneling people through and directing them, so she had three different stations that people could go through to get food, both sides of the table, and then the counter lines. And a manager came by, saw what she was doing, and initially was kind of upset because this isn't how we do things. You're not doing things according to our standards, according to our protocols, right? But he asked her, what are you doing? What's going on here? And so she tried to explain the situation. There was a crisis. There was a bottleneck. She had tried to fix it. And he took about 5 minutes just staring at it, looking at it, watching the process. And then finally, his face lit up with joy. And he was like, this is brilliant. He's like, who taught you how to do this? She said, well, I'm just a mom, you know. I saw a need. I just filled it. And he goes, no, this is incredible. So he went and got some, like, bigger boss, right? And he brings the big boss down. And he's like, look at what she did here and see how she set this up. And so, you know, she, of course, felt pleased that because first she thought she was going to get in trouble. But then she was pleased that she was being recognized. But that's somebody who thinks like an entrepreneur, not like an employee. If you want to know what it feels like to think like an employee, just go try to order a hamburger at a fast food place and tell them you don't want pickles. They don't have a button to push for that. And they're like, I'm sorry, I'm going to have to go get a manager, right? Well, that's what schooling produces. It produces somebody who basically is saying, like, you know, I am trained to know how to work within a factory system. But somebody who has been truly educated knows how to think entrepreneurially. Schooling has never met a problem that it doesn't believe it can solve by throwing more money at it. In the state of Michigan, where I live in the United States, only 28% of the students who attend government schools read at the state's level of proficiency. 72% of all students in our entire state do not read at the state's level of proficiency. And this has been a problem that's been ongoing for decades. It just gets worse and worse, right? And so the solution that is proposed by the Department of Education every year is, well, the problem is the reason that 72% of our students can't read at the state's level of proficiency, which, by the way, is a very low standard. It's the state's level of proficiency for reading is not a high bar. But they said the reason that we're having this problem is we don't make enough money. If we just had more money, we could solve the problem. Here's why I don't believe them, right? So if you go back to 1970 and you look at literacy rates, I'm going to have to make a PowerPoint slide on the wall here because I didn't prepare one. So we'll call this side 1970. We'll call this side today, right? If you take literacy rates, they do this. They fall at an angle, like a 45-degree angle, just like that. But then if you take spending from 1970 today, it does this. And there is an absolute correlation with government schooling. And the more money that we spend, the lower the academic outcome. And I actually believe it's not merely correlation. I believe it's causation. And so their approach is, well, if we ever run into a problem, we just need more money for that. Well, true education creates real solutions. And real solutions are not solved by throwing more money at a problem. Real solutions are usually presented by people who care. And that's the beauty of home education, is that there's no one who cares more for your child or has more invested in the future of your child than you do as a parent. And so you are going to be the most invested that anybody could be invested in your child. Bernard Idings Bell was the president of Baird College. He lived from 1886 to 1958. So he's leading a school of higher institution, higher education. Listen to what he says about schooling. Quote, "The millions of dollars which we devote every year to high school education are, for the most part, money spent for the retarding of intelligence, the discouragement of efficiency, and the stunting of character." And he was saying these things prior to the 1960s, back when comparatively government schooling was quite good, comparatively speaking. Schooling creates a scenario where students try to survive the tedium of being locked into a classroom for 7 hours a day, studying arbitrary subjects that they're not interested in, that some bureaucrat somewhere decided they need to learn because they're 9 years old and they're in the fourth or fifth grade, and so therefore you must learn these facts. Many of the things that the students study, they never use in real life. There's no practical application. And as I said at a previous session, you forget all of the things that you don't actually use in life, which is 90% of the things that you learned in school. 90% of the things you learn in school, you do not remember anymore to this day because you've never used them. So there's a mass inefficiency to that kind of system, and it creates boredom. And so what does the school do as a solution to the fact that children are bored out of their minds? They label them with a disorder and medicate them at taxpayer expense. In reality, there's absolutely nothing wrong with most of their children. Those children, they're just smart, healthy children who know there's a better place for them to be than in that classroom for 7 hours a day. Real education is not teaching our children how to survive tedium, but it's learning how to take risks. Ralph Waldo Emerson, the author and poet, said this: "We are shut up in schools and college recitation rooms for 10 or 15 years and come out at last with a belly full of words and do not know a thing." Schooling is very much about teaching to the test, whereas true education is about making discoveries. I don't desire for my children to memorize millions and millions of useless facts. I want my children to know how to think. I want them to know how to reason. I want them to know how to study. I want them to be explorers and make discoveries. And I want them to be inquisitive. I want them to know how to ask good questions, not merely be good test takers. Again, I said this in a previous session, but I believe that the value of the standardized test is that it identifies people in society who are good at taking tests. It's not a quotient for intelligence. In fact, I think if you're on a genius level, you're probably really horrible at taking tests. In fact, people who are geniuses almost always inevitably end up doing really bad academically in school. Why? Because government school is one of the only institutions in the world that actually aims for average. You know, they have this bell curve, right? You know, here's the bell curve. And you got 20% of the students on the margin over here who struggle. We call them special education students, right? They struggle because they're on the low end of the 20%. And you got 20% over here that we call gifted. Those students are especially bored out of their mind because they had the whole thing in 15 minutes and they were done. They didn't need the whole hour class. So they're just sitting there trying to not go stark raving crazy for the rest of the class, right? But then who do you really teach in the government school system? You teach that 60% in the middle. So you're aiming for average systemically within that program. Plutarch, the ancient writer, said this: "The mind is not a vessel that needs filling, but wood that needs igniting." Your goal as an educator should not be to fill a child's mind as though it's a bucket that needs filled up with information. Instead, it should be lighting a fire for a love of learning. One of the things that, unfortunately, institutional schooling does is it quenches in a child that innate love that they are born with for learning. Every child comes into the world being inquisitive, asking questions, wanting to know, wanting to learn. And so sadly, so many of those students have that fire put out through the mechanism of institutional schooling. Schooling is very much about an information download, whereas true education focuses on the character of the student. Theodore Roosevelt, the 26th president of the United States, said this: to educate a man in mind and not in morals is to educate a menace to society. If you simply give someone information and they don't have the ethics to know what to do with that information, you can simply create a more intelligent criminal. I've always been surprised when people find out that my wife and I homeschool our children. They'll sometimes say, but aren't you concerned that your children might be missing out on something? And I say, well, actually, we know they're missing out on quite a bit of things. And that's part of why we homeschool. We're really thankful that they don't get bullied, except by me, but I'm their dad. We're really glad that they don't use a cat litter box. There's quite a few things that we know they're missing out on. But like, what exactly do you have? What were you meaning? You know, well, I mean, just there's a lot of things that you learn in school that you don't learn anywhere else. Oh, like what? Well, like standing in line. Yeah, I'll just say that's not a really high priority that I have for my children. Yeah, I mean, I want my children to learn how to be adventurers. I want them to learn how to explore and make discoveries, not stand in line. It's such an institutional mentality. Beatrix Potter, the author, said this: thank goodness I was never sent to school. It would have rubbed off some of the originality. Charlotte Mason, the British educator and writer, said this: look on education as something between the child's soul and God. Modern education, and by that she means institutional schooling, tends to look at it as something between the child's brain and the standardized test. Government schooling is very committed to groupthink and conformity. Education is about freedom of expression. An atheist named H.L. Mencken wrote in 1924 in the American Mercury magazine what the goal of public education was. And he wasn't lamenting this. He actually thought this was probably a good thing. But he said, the aim of public education is not to spread enlightenment at all. It's simply to reduce as many individuals as possible to the same safe level, to breed a standard citizenry, and to put down dissent and originality. This is exactly why Stalin used a government school model. It's exactly why Hitler used a government school model, because they learned that they could, through that system, break the allegiance of children from their parents, and then they could create conformity in the classroom. And through social engineering, they could teach those children to do anything they wanted them to do, even if it was against the values of their parents and against the values of the church. In the United States, in 1928, John Dewey, who was the founder of the progressive education movement, went to the USSR, studied their model, and came back and wrote an essay and said, we need to institute this 30 to 40 student classroom model that the USSR is using in the United States schools. He was a socialist. He believed very strongly in the power of government controlling future generations. And he believed that the older model prior to the government schools, the older model of like the one room schoolhouse where you have K through 8 and, you know, maybe 15, 20 students of all different ages, he believed that would not be effective for creating enough conformity and creating enough peer pressure to break children's allegiance from their parents. But he found that if you took a school classroom of 30 to 40 students, all the same age, in 1 year's time, almost all of those students would become peer dependent. They would care more about fitting into the beliefs and values of the classroom than they would care about the values of the parents. He saw the power of it with the Soviet system, and he saw the power of it with the German system coming up through the 1920s. And then, of course, we really saw where that went in the 1930s and 40s. It's just so interesting to me that we don't question those things, that even though they have very nefarious origins, and that the founders of the government school system said they were creating the government school to eradicate Christianity and destroy the family, We're totally ignorant of history. We don't even know that. And yet we promote these government-controlled schools as though it's somehow a Christian idea. It's somehow a patriotic idea. Even though there's zero verses in the Bible that tell you, please send your children to the government to have your children taught. Like, there are no verses in the Bible that tell you to do that. There are dozens of verses in the Bible that tell you as parents to teach your own children. None that say send your children to the government. And yet 85% of all evangelical Protestant Christians are doing that. Why do we do that? Well, I'll tell you why we do it. That's because that's how we were raised. That's what our parents did. That's what our grandparents did. And what I would suggest is that when we are ignorant of two things, history and theology, we are very easily enslaved. We really need to rethink this. It was a very widespread social experiment, but I'm going to say 170 years later, the data is in. It was a horrible experiment. We never should have done it. And it bothers me when people say, well, you know, the public schools today are broken. They need to be fixed. Well, what do you mean by that? The founders of the government school system started it saying our intent is we want to destroy Christianity and we want to destroy the family. Let me tell you something. The public schools are not broken. They're succeeding beyond the wildest expectations of the founders. They're not broken. They're working. They're doing exactly what they were intended to do. Now, if you say, well, no, they're broken because they're not actually educating children, they had no intent to. That was not the purpose of the government school system. It was not to teach children reading, writing, and arithmetic. That was the disguise. That was the mask. That was the veneer. And the reason they're not accomplishing those things is that was never their intended purpose. Their intended purpose was creating a mass citizenry who would believe politically correct ideology that was a narrative that was set by the government, not by families, not by churches, but indeed by the values of the state. Government schooling is very much about indoctrination, whereas true education is about critical analysis. There's a fascinating man who's passed away now, John Taylor Gatto. He lived from 1935 to 2018. He was a teacher in New York City, taught in one of the most difficult suburbs of the city, dealing with these at-risk students. Students that, frankly, most people had given up on. They believed that these students were too far gone. They couldn't be taught. And John Taylor Gatto, being a public school teacher, seeing these students who were coming from, you know, poor urban environments, they were failing academically. He knew he had to do something radical, that the status quo wasn't working. He had to try something really different. So he made changes in his classroom. He started doing things different than all of the other public school teachers. And his students' academic achievement rose so dramatically, so high, so fast, that he was recognized internationally by many journalists, and they started to publish articles about him, and TV networks started to come and interview him and try to find out, what is Mr. Gatto doing that is so successful that no one else has figured out? And he won New York City and New York State Teacher of the Year somewhere around 1989, I think it was. Well, New York State in the United States is kind of the mecca for government schooling. Like, everything gets kind of piloted there. So California, New York, those are the states that everybody looks to for government schooling. And whatever happens there eventually trickles down to all the other states. So there was a great fascination about Mr. Gatto. Well, after he retired, after he stopped teaching, he wrote some books. One of his books was called The Underground History of American Education, where he actually told the history of the founders of the government school system and what they said in their own words was their intent for starting the school system. Really intriguing, because again, most people don't know anything about the founders of the government school system. They've never looked into it. They just think it was started by Christians. It was a Christian thing, which is the farthest thing from the truth. But he also wrote some other books, like Weapons of Mass Instruction. He wrote another book called Dumbing Us Down, where he gave the thesis that the government school system was intentionally trying to make people less educated than they were before they got there. In fact, in the United States, I don't know if you know this, but right now, currently, 54% of all adult Americans, 54%, read at a sixth grade level or less. One quarter of all American adults are functionally illiterate right now. And yet, if you go back to the colonial era, there was almost zero illiteracy in the United States. During the 1700s, the early 1800s, before the time of the government school invention, almost zero illiteracy. And now we're spending billions and billions of dollars. We have these mass schooling assembly lines, these mass production schools. And we've actually decreased academic performance. And the school has actually created the problem they purport to solve. In fact, I often encourage people in our country, go back and read the writers from the 1700s. Like one of our founding documents is something called the Federalist Papers. It's a public document. You can look it up online. I always challenge people, if you think that we're smarter today than we were during the colonial period of the late 1700s, the early 1800s, go try to read the Federalist Papers. See if you can even read it. And if you can read it, I challenge you to try to tell me what it means. It was written for the average citizen at that time. Everybody read it. Everybody understood it. And yet today, the average citizen can't even read it, let alone have any idea what they're talking about. That's how dumbed down we are. And so in John Taylor Gatto's book, he wrote this and said, this is what the government school system has actually done. We're less intelligent now than we were in the late 1700s and early 1800s. We just think we're smarter because we have access to more information. But after he had retired, he had resigned from teaching, he finally was able to say in his book, Weapons of Mass Instruction, what his secret was, what his method was that made him so successful in the classroom. He said, I couldn't talk about it at all while I was still teaching or I would have got fired. So here's what he said, here's what happened. I realized that these inner city youth had given up on learning. They had decided that they just couldn't learn and who cares, and they decided they were too stupid. They just gave up. So he said, I knew I couldn't teach them unless I could tap into their interests. So I asked my class, what are you interested in? What would you like to study? And they all said nothing. Like, we're not interested in anything. He said, you have to be interested in something. He said, I'll tell you what, I'll make you a deal. He said, you tell me something that you're interested in, and I will give you the whole day off school tomorrow. So they start thinking, like, surely there's something I'm interested in. So this one student says, well, I'm interested in baseball. He says, great. He goes, okay, I'm going to let you off school tomorrow on one condition. He says, you take the whole day away from school, and you study baseball any which way you want to. You can watch a baseball game on television. You can go to a baseball game. You can go to the library, get a book about baseball. You can talk to your friends about baseball. You can ask your neighbors what they know about baseball. You can go hit a baseball. I don't care what you do. You just come back and you write me a little 3-paragraph essay about what you learned about baseball. And if you'll do that for me, I'll give you the day off school. This kid's like, okay. So he gets a get out of jail free card. So the next student, he's like, what are you interested in? And the kid's like, I have no idea. He's like, okay, well, you don't get the day off. And the kid's like, well, let me think, you know. Art. He goes, you know anything about art? Nope, no idea. I know nothing about art. He's like, okay, well, take the day off tomorrow. Don't come to school. And just study art any which way you want to study art. You can go to the art museum. You can get a book about art. You can talk to people about art. I don't care what you do. Come back, write me 3 paragraphs about what you learned that day about art, and you'll get the day off. So he said, here's what I found out. I just started doing this on a regular basis. The more frequently the children did not come to school, the better their academic scores started to go. Their academic achievement started to go up. Why? Because they were coming back to life. They were becoming human once again. He said, before long, like, they were interested in all kinds of things. But it had to be something different next day. So he'd say, I'll tell you what, I'll give you today off school too. But you got to tell, or tomorrow off school, but you got to tell me something you're interested in. You got to come back and write me 3 paragraphs about what you learned with it. He said, basically, what I was doing was I was letting kids not come to school as much as I could possibly do without getting caught. And he said, what I found was that these students, the less they came to school, the better they did academically. And I realized that it was the school that was the problem. It wasn't the student that was the problem. The school was the problem. And simply removing the problem solved the problem. And so, again, he said, it was so awkward because I had people coming from all over the world wanting to find out what my genius method was for improving these students' learning. And I couldn't tell them the only thing I let them do, or the only thing that I did different, was I let them not come to school. Mark Twain says this, education consists mainly in what we have unlearned. Schooling's about narrow focus. It's about you having to learn a certain set of facts that you, some bureaucrat somewhere decide you have to learn at a certain age. Education is about broad observation. Samuel Blumenfeld, who, along with John Taylor Gatto, I think is one of the greatest historians on the topic of government schooling within the last century, he said this, children do not enter public school hating life. Educators tell children there is no God who cares for them. No wonder many children begin to hate life. If you've never read Sam Blumenfeld's books, like Is Public Education Necessary? I encourage you to read his books. He also, the last book that he wrote before he died was called Crimes of the Educators, which he wrote with Alex Newman. Excellent books, great history of the government school system. Albert Einstein, the physicist, said, education is what remains after one has forgotten what one has learned in school. Schooling is very focused on compulsory attendance, whereas education is focused on a lifestyle of learning. Plato said, a free man ought not to learn anything under duress. Compulsory learning never sticks to the mind. Do you think that schooling and education are truly synonymous? Well, listen to what Thomas Edison, the inventor of the light bulb, the inventor of the RCA record player, some people credit him with having a big part in creating refrigeration. He said this, I remember that I was never able to get along at school. I was at the foot of the class. He was one of the worst students within the government school system. Why was that? Because he was a flat-out genius. And government schools were not created for genius, they were created for average. Sir Winston Churchill said this, how I hated schools, and what a life of anxiety I lived there. I counted the hours to the end of every term when I should return home. Do you think Thomas Edison and Sir Winston Churchill were stupid? I certainly don't think so. And yet they were at the bottom of their class. C.S. Lewis hated school. He said, in fact, if parents of every generation knew what actually happened in their children's schools, the history of education would be vastly different. But most parents have no idea what happens in their child's school. They assume that their child's school is very much like the school that they went to. Let me share something with you. If you went to government school 6 years ago, it is not the same kind of school that it is now. So if you went to school 20 years ago or 40 years ago, you have no idea what the government school system is like, not even close. So it bothers me so much when people defend the government school system on, well, I went to school and it didn't affect me. Well, you went to an entirely different kind of school. And there were problems with it when you attended, but the problems have continued to escalate, and they will continue to escalate. It's the nature of it. Albert Einstein said this, It is, in fact, nothing short of a miracle that the modern methods of instruction have not entirely strangled the holy curiosity of inquiry. For this delicate little plant, now he's talking about a child here, this delicate little plant, aside from stimulation, stands mainly in need of freedom. Sounds a lot like what John Taylor Gatto was saying, right? The more you just let them go free, the better they did. This delicate little plant stands mainly in need of freedom. Without this, it goes to wreck and ruin without fail. It is a grave mistake to think that the enjoyment of seeing and searching can be prompted by a means of coercion and a sense of duty. Albert Einstein, like many of these geniuses, was considered unteachable. He was considered to be a student who couldn't learn. Why was that? Because these students simply did not fit into the mold of institutional government schooling. You know, if I was a tyrant and like I wanted somehow to, and I had the power and the will for some reason to destroy the love of learning in millions of children around the world, I think I know how I would do it. I would take this multi-step approach. Here's the first thing I would do. I would eradicate faith from schooling. I would cut all learning off from the source of knowledge and wisdom and understanding, which is God Himself. Secondly, I would divorce academics from real life. I would give a student dozens and dozens of mathematic drill sheets or sheets of sentences to diagram. And when the student said, "Why am I doing this? And how will I ever use this in the real world?" I would just laugh a sinister laugh. And I would say, "You won't ever use it in the real world, and you don't need to know what it is or what it does in outside of the classroom. You simply have 100 more worksheets to do." Right? I mean, what does that sound like? It sounds almost like a form of torture, doesn't it? But I think that if I did that, I think I could destroy a child's love of learning. I would also remove parents from the equation. I would try to keep them out of the way as much as possible, and I would separate a child from the people that they love the most and who love them the most and who care about them the most and know them the best and probably have more insight into the child than anyone else. I would certainly keep them out of the classroom if I wanted to destroy a child's love of learning. And then I would segregate these classes by age, because we know that that prepares them for the real world. Because you know that when you started your job, they're like, "How old are you?" And you're like, "I'm 32 and they're like, "32? Okay, you're going to go to the 32nd floor, because the 32nd floor, that's the office level where all the 32-year-olds are. And all these years that we have prepared you to only know how to talk to and interface with and relate to people your own age, we did that because that's the real world." Some of you are like, "Is he being sarcastic?" I always love people who don't have a sarcasm gene. They're some of my favorite people, because I can just continue to be sarcastic for like the next hour, and they're like, "Are you being sarcastic?" I'm like, "Me? What, me? No." You know, people are like, so, "But if you homeschool your children, aren't you concerned about socialization?" Like, how is that normal socialization? Where outside of the school classroom do you ever find people lumped together with only people their age? Is that really the real world? When you're homeschooling, you learn how to relate to people your age, but also older people, younger people. You interact with people of all ages, which is what real life is like, right? So I'd create this really weird, artificial, age-segregated class if I wanted to destroy a love of learning. I would encourage comparison through grades. I would tell a child, if you don't learn all the same things that all of the other children your age and your grade learn and are learning, and if you're scoring slightly lower than all the rest of them, you are an inferior human being. And your entire sense of self-worth needs to be predicated on this little report card that we bring home. And we hope that when you read it, you will cry. I would make them immobile. I'd make them sit in a chair, and I would say, "You cannot move. You can't get up." And in fact, I would demoralize them even further by saying, "You can't even use the restroom unless you raise your hand to get permission from me." Because I think that would kind of destroy a love of life. I would cultivate political correctness, where I try to teach them to conform, that you have to think and believe the way that all of us do here. You can't think for yourself. Mandate silence, no talking. Isn't it so funny? "Well, but if you homeschool your children, they'll miss out on socialization." I went to private school for 2 years. You know what I got in trouble for the most at private school? Socializing. They're like, "We don't do that here. That's not what this is for." I'm like, okay, now I'm confused, right? I was homeschooled. Everybody's worried about my socialization. I come to school. I'm trying to socialize. They're like, "Nope, that's not what we do here. Be quiet." In 1983, when Ronald Reagan was president of the United States, this goes back a little ways, right? Anybody here living in 1983? Okay. Three of you want to admit it. Okay. Everybody else is, I guarantee you some of you were born before 1983. You're like, not raising it. Well, maybe you can't raise your hand. Maybe that's the problem. Okay, but here's, so he commissioned this group. He's like, I want to find out how bad our government school system is, because he knew it was bad, but he didn't know how bad. So he had this commission, this task force called the National Commission on Excellence in Education, study the schools, and then come back and report to him on how bad they were. And they put it in this document called A Nation at Risk. I'm just going to read you one paragraph. This is their synopsis of what they found in the American government schools in 1983. Quote, if an unfriendly foreign power, like let's say the Russians, had attempted to impose on America the mediocre educational performance that exists today, we might well have viewed it as an act of war. In other words, if we could find there was Russian collusion to make our schools as bad as they are, we'd declare war on them. But then they finally said, but as it stands, we've allowed this to happen to ourselves. And that's what they were saying about the government school system in 1983. Do you think the government school systems today are better or worse than they were in 1983? What I'm saying is this problem has been going on for a long time. We're just simply oblivious to it. I'm going to end with this. In the United States, there have been several occasions where students went all the way through K-12 in a government school, graduated, were given a diploma, and couldn't read their diploma. Completely illiterate. Couldn't read, couldn't write. So what their parents did is they went to the courts and they sued the government school system for like a kind of breach of contract. It was like, we contracted with you to educate our child and you didn't do it. So we want financial remuneration from you. We want money as compensation for you failing to educate our child. Now, you know, going into court, before anybody's heard any evidence, these people are getting zero money, right? You know they're not getting a payout. Why are they not going to get any money? Because if they gave them money, you'd have the largest class action lawsuit in the history of the world, as millions and millions of people would sue the school and just bankrupt the country, right? So you know they're getting zero money. The only question is, why will the court say, we're not giving you anything? Right. So that's the issue. So this has gone to several different Supreme Court cases. And I'll not read the actual wording of the cases. But here's one in Michigan that was called the ACLU versus Highland Park in 2014. This is just one of several of these cases. So here's what the defense for the government school system, the lawyers, said on behalf of the teachers and administrators in the government school system. They said, we cannot be expected to educate children if there are a few conditions in place. So, number one, if the child does not have the mental capacity to be able to learn at grade level, we can't be expected to educate them and teach them at grade level. In other words, let's say that some doctor has determined that this child, this student who is 15 years old has the mental capacity of a second grader and can't, that's their ceiling, and they can't surpass that. The argument from the lawyers was, we can't be expected to teach these students at a 10th grade level if they only possess the mental capacity of a second grader. That was argument number one. Argument number two, we cannot be expected to educate a child who comes to school who doesn't want to learn. So let's say that a student sits at his desk in the classroom, puts his hands over his ears, closes his eyes, and for the entirety of the school day says, I can't hear you. I can't hear you. I don't want to be here. I'm not listening. You can't teach me. The argument from the teachers, as presented by the lawyers, was, we as school teachers can't be expected to teach that child. We can't be expected to educate that child if the child simply doesn't want to learn. Argument number two. Argument number three, we cannot be expected to educate a child where there is not proper reinforcement at home on the part of the parents. If the parents are not encouraging them to do their homework, if the parents are not telling them to be involved in school, and school is important, and do your work, and respect your teachers, et cetera, we can't teach a child like that. So three arguments, mental capacity, interest in learning, and then affirmation or encouragement at home. They said, if these three things are not in place, we simply cannot educate a child. the courts agreed with the lawyers for the public school, because as I told you, we're not giving anybody money. There's no payout. So they're like, hey, these are good arguments. So they said, sorry. Yeah, no, you don't win any settlement. And then they made a ruling to kind of clarify the situation so this wouldn't just keep happening over and over. And they said that the school had no imperative mandate to educate children. They only have a mandate to create and maintain a system of public schools. And as long as they create and maintain a system of public schools, they have done the entirety of their duty. Now, I don't know if you're picking up what I'm laying down, but what they are saying is, we have no responsibility at all to educate your child. We only have the responsibility to school your child. 100% of the responsibility for the education of your child is on you as parents. Zero responsibility for education from the schools. 100% of responsibility of education on the parents. The only responsibility by law in the courts for the government school system is to create and maintain a system of public schools. Here's the irony of this. Homeschoolers can be prosecuted for educational neglect. If you have a child who does not read at the state's level of proficiency, or who is multiple grades behind, you can be prosecuted by the state for doing that. The public school can have the exact same scenario and can never be prosecuted for that. You can graduate a child, give them a diploma, and they can't read or write a word. That's fine. No problems. They're immune to prosecution for educational neglect. But the hypocrisy of it is they can prosecute parents whose children are a couple grades behind. And then what would be the solution to that? Let's say that you have a situation, because people are like, well, you know, I think some homeschooling parents do a good job, but I think there's a lot of homeschooling parents that aren't doing a good job. They're just not really teaching their children. Their children probably aren't really learning anything at home. Ever heard that? Ever said that? Okay. Here's what I say in Michigan. Let's say that we find one of these families. Their kids aren't reading at grade level. What should we do? How do we fix that problem? Well, here's what the educrats tell me. You should take that homeschool child and put him in the public school. I'm like, okay, now they're there with the 72% of all public schoolers who don't read at grade level. They'll fit right in. And the school can't be prosecuted for that, but the parents can. So what I'm saying to you is, by case law, the courts have agreed with my thesis, which is that schooling is completely different than true education. They're not synonymous. I think in many cases, schooling is one of the greatest hindrances to true education, and that schools are completely and totally immune to the same level of accountability and responsibility that parents are. Parents are deemed 100% responsible for the education of their children, and they can be prosecuted for not doing it. Schools can't be. So here's my question. If 100% of the responsibility is put on you already by the government, why don't you just do it yourself? The only commitment they have is to school your child, to create and maintain a system of public schools. The whole responsibility for their education is already on you. Why not just do it? You'll get a much better outcome. You'll be able to have a much better relationship with your children. And many of you are doing that. And I just want to affirm those of you that are doing it. You made the right choice. Academically, your students on average are going to score 15 to 30 percentile higher than public schools. It's been that way for 40 years. Socially, their studies, they're going to be better equipped. Better equipped because they're socializing with people from all walks of life, not just one classroom of children all the same age. I'll tell you this, the one thing that some other teacher can never do, some other teacher might be able to teach your child algebra better than you can. They might be able to teach them chemistry better than you can. We'll grant that. Okay, there may be some professional out there that maybe can teach a subject better than you can. Here's the one thing that no one else, no matter how intelligent they are, can ever do better than you. No one can ever give your child you. And that's the thing that they want the most. That's the thing they need the most. No one else can be a parent. No one else can give them the best of you. I've never met a parent later in life who says, man, I just wish I wouldn't have spent so much time with my kids. Never have. I've heard thousands of parents say, well, I wish I wouldn't have worked so much. Wish I hadn't traveled so much. Wish I hadn't been absent. Wish I wouldn't miss so many football games and dance recitals for my kids. I've heard that. Never heard anybody say, man, I regret spending too much time with my children. The one thing that you will never regret is the time that you invest with your children, because it's a tiny little window and it all goes by so fast. Let's pray. Heavenly Father, we just thank you for these children that you've given to us. We pray, Father, that you would equip us and enable us to take the responsibility that you've given us to raise them well, to prepare them for life. Father, we just ask that you'd give us courage and patience, and that we would be inspired and motivated every day, that you've given us and trusted us with these eternal souls. Lord, help us to look to you for grace and help in our time of need. We commit this in Jesus' name. Amen. One last thing I'll say, my books, if you didn't get them, if you want ebooks or audiobooks, my publisher is Masterbooks. There's a little logo there, masterbooks.com. There's ebooks and audiobooks that you can get of almost all my books. You can download them if you're interested in electronic copies. I hadn't mentioned that previously. And also, please subscribe to the Family Renewal Podcast on YouTube or wherever you listen to podcasts. God bless.
Once again, the Manitoba Association of Christian Homeschools would like to thank the Learning House for sponsoring this recording. Please visit them at learninghouse.ca.